It started in 1757 with Battle of Plassey and gradually British penetrated almost all areas of administration. British colonial economy can be divided into different phases. The first, mercantilist phase, from 1757 up to 1813, was marked by direct plunder and the East India Company's monopoly trade, functioning through the investment of surplus revenues in the purchase, often at arbitrarily low prices, of Indian, primarily Bengal, finished goods for export to England and Europe. By the Charter Act of 1813, the monopoly of the East India Company had been put an end to, and private traders of free merchants were permitted under special license to trade lawfully. In its result, the Charter Act happened to be the death blow for native industries. British colonial exploitation of India and globalization. Kundan Kumar Thakur, Proceedings of the Indian History Congress, 2013. Assalamu alaikum. Welcome back to Season 10 of the Islamic History Podcast. This season, we are continuing our discussion on the Mughal Empire. This is Episode 10-6, The Prince. Ahmed Shah Durrani, again. Ahmed Shah Durrani, the ruler of Afghanistan, had great respect for Mu'in-ul-Mulk, the deceased Mughal governor of Punjab. He also considered Mu'in-ul-Mulk's widow, Mughlani Begum, like a sister to him. Therefore, when Imad-ul-Mulk, the Mughal grand vizier, had her forcibly brought to Delhi, Ahmed Shah Durrani used this as an excuse to invade India again in 1756. With the news of the impending invasion, Delhi was in chaos as its citizens tried to flee. Imad-ul-Mulk tried to raise an army, but he just didn't have the money for it. He then asked the Rohillas and the Jats for help. The Rohillas wanted money, which, of course, Imad-ul-Mulk did not have, and the Jats wanted Imad-ul-Mulk to expel the Marathas, but he didn't want to do that because he didn't want to turn against them as he was their puppet. Seeing that he was out of options, Imad-ul-Mulk finally tried to negotiate with Ahmed Shah Durrani. Well, the Afghan ruler demanded 20 million rupees, which, of course, Imad-ul-Mulk just did not have. Hence, the Afghan army continued its march towards Delhi. Well, the Afghans began their occupation of Delhi in January 1757, and with this, Ahmed Shah Durrani was declared the King of India. The khutbah was read in his name, and Emperor Alamgir II, the Mughal emperor, was kept under house arrest, though he was not harmed. Emperor Alamgir II went from being a puppet of the Marathas to being a puppet of the Afghans. It was an upgrade, but he was still a puppet. The Marathas had abandoned Delhi once they realized that Imad-ul-Mulk couldn't pay them, and so there was nothing to stop the Afghans. The Afghans looted the palace, taking millions of rupees along the way. They also took several Mughal princesses as, quote-unquote, wives. Ahmed Shah Durrani then led his Afghan forces to Mathura, which is about 80 miles southeast of Delhi. In Mathura, the Afghans fought and defeated the Jats, after which Ahmed Shah Durrani then returned to Delhi and, for some reason, reinstated Imad-ul-Mulk as Grand Vizier. And he also appointed Najib Rohila Khan as Mir Bakshi, or Army Paymaster. Najib Rohila Khan, also known as Najib-ud-Dawla, was the Nawab of Saharanpur. Saharanpur is about 90 miles north of Delhi. Najib-ud-Dawla had defected and joined the Afghans when Ahmed Shah Durrani took over Delhi. Not surprisingly, Imad-ul-Mulk, the Grand Vizier, and Najib-ud-Dawla, the Mir Bakshi, just didn't get along. And it wasn't long before they began plotting against each other. Meanwhile, the Jats used this as an opportunity to return to Mathura, where they regained control of their territory, including the city of Agra. The Battle of Plassey. Ever since 1717, the British East India Company had become very powerful in Bengal. That was the year that Emperor Farrukh Siyar gave them a special tax benefit. In April 1756, Siraj ud-Daulah became Nawab of Bengal after his father, Ali Vardi Khan, had died. We discuss Ali Vardi Khan in Episode 3 when he became Nawab of Bengal back in 1740. Siraj ud-Daulah was only 21 years old when he became the Nawab, but he didn't trust the British. When the British started building forts without his permission, he demanded that they stop, but not surprisingly, the British ignored him and kept on building their forts. This prompted Siraj ud-Daulah to march on Qasim Bazar in Calcutta in June 1756. He captured Fort William in Calcutta and had the British soldiers imprisoned in a small cell in the fort's dungeon. This event came to be known as the Black Hole of Calcutta. According to the story, there were so many men packed into the cell that many of them died from suffocation. Now, there is some skepticism as to the severity of this incident. Nonetheless, the British sent an army led by Robert Clive to take the region back. The two sides fought two battles in Calcutta in early 1757. The British won the first battle in January 1757, which allowed them to retake Calcutta. However, the second battle, which occurred in February 1757, was a stalemate. The two sides negotiated and Siraj ud-Daulah agreed to return all captured territory to the British. With this taken care of, Robert Clive then led an assault against the French at Chandanagar in Bengal. The British were victorious at Chandanagar, but this in turn angered Siraj ud-Daulah. Now by this time, Robert Clive had grown tired of Siraj ud-Daulah and decided he wanted to get rid of him. So he conspired with the Jagat Sets and Mir Jafar. The Jagat Sets were like the Rothschilds of India, and Mir Jafar. The Jagat Sets were the Rothschilds of India, while Mir Jafar was the Bengal paymaster, and he happened to work for Siraj ud-Daulah. However, Robert Clive promised to make Mir Jafar ruler of Bengal if he betrayed the Nawab of Bengal, his boss, Siraj ud-Daulah. Well, hostilities broke out between the British and Siraj ud-Daulah yet again, and Siraj ud-Daulah, along with his paymaster Mir Jafar, they marched out to meet the British in June 1757. The two sides began skirmishing at a town called Plassey near the Hooghly River. But everything changed when Mir Jafar defected to the British in the middle of the battle. Siraj ud-Daulah's remaining forces panicked when they saw this, and they were routed. Siraj ud-Daulah fled and hid in a mango grove, but Mir Jafar's men hunted him down and hacked him to death. Then they went on and killed all the women in his household. Finally, they paraded his dead body through the streets of Bengal. Mir Jafar now became the new ruler of Bengal, but he was just a puppet of the British to whom he owed his position. Through Mir Jafar, the British now controlled Bengal, the richest province in India. Prince Gohar. Emperor Alamgir II sent the heir apparent, Prince Gohar, to restore order in the Rewari region. The Rewari region is about 45 miles southeast of Delhi. Prince Gohar did not have much success on this mission, however, he did make friends with a local Maratha officer. Well, the Mughal Grand Vizier, Imadul Mulk, was suspicious of this relationship, so he ordered the prince to return to Delhi. But the prince realized that this could mean his life or perhaps even his death. Listen to this quote. The prince slowly returned to Delhi, anxiously considering his options, stopping to camp at several Mughal gardens on the way and making a pilgrimage to pray at his favorite shrine in Murali. Several friends at court had ridden out to Haryana to warn him to be very careful, telling him that he was walking into a trap. They told him that Imadu'l-Daula, far from wishing to honor him, actually intended instead to cast him back into the Salatin cage from which he had been so recently released, as soon as he stepped foot inside the Red Fort. All the while, Imadu'l-Mulk continued his charm offensive, sending messages of welcome and friendship in large trays of cooked delicacies, pots of flowers and boxes of pan, telling him he was waiting to receive him in the Red Fort. William Dalrymple, The Anarchy. So with these suspicions, the prince turned to Shuja'ud-Dawla, who was the Nawab of Awadh, for protection. Well, Shuja'ud-Dawla, the Nawab of Awadh, welcomed the prince, and Prince Gauhard settled in Lucknow in January 1759. This news infuriated Imadu'l-Mulk, but he didn't have the strength nor the money to go to war with the Nawab of Awadh. Maratha Ascendancy. The Marathas had sat back and witnessed Ahmed Shah Durrani's invasion of Delhi, but they chose not to get involved. As we know, they weren't paid for it, so they weren't going to get involved. Once the Afghans had left India, the Marathas took this as an opportunity to expand their territory. First, they defeated the Jats and captured Agra. Then, in July 1757, the Maratha army marched on Delhi and camped just outside the city. Emperor Alamgir II and Imadu'l-Mulk joined the Marathas at their camp. As we know, the emperor was a puppet of the Grand Vizier Imadu'l-Mulk, and the Grand Vizier was a puppet of the Marathas. What this meant is that the emperor was going to just sit by as his own city was invaded. Najibud-Dawla, the Mir Bakshi, he was left behind to defend the city. So on August 11, 1757, the Marathas attacked Delhi. They captured the Red Fort after a few days and then went about looting and pillaging the city. Najibud-Dawla eventually signed a peace treaty, then retired from political life, for a while at least. The Marathas then moved on to Punjab, where they allied with the Sikhs, and together they conquered Sirhind in March of 1758. Then they went on to capture Lahore in April 1758. The Afghan army was pushed out of India and beyond the Indus River. The Marathas established control over Punjab and appointed their own rulers. As the Marathas consolidated their hold in North India, other leading figures grew concerned. A local Islamic scholar, and some say it was actually Alamgir II, he reached out to Ahmed Shah Durrani, begging him to protect the Muslims of India. Imadu'l-Mulk takes over. Well, the Afghan ruler, Ahmed Shah Durrani, he was also concerned about how close the Marathas were to Afghanistan, which was his stronghold. Well, whatever his motivations, whether it was to protect Afghanistan or to protect the Muslims of India, Ahmed Shah Durrani responded to the call. In August 1759, he sent an army to attack the Marathas, but this Afghan army was defeated. So Ahmed Shah Durrani gathered an even larger army, and this time he led them towards India himself. Upon learning of the Afghans approaching, the Marathas also prepared for war. And they even demanded their puppet emperor, Alamgir II, support the effort. Nonetheless, Ahmed Shah Durrani conquered Punjab from the Marathas. Well, the Marathas and Imadu'l-Mulk, they suspected that Emperor Alamgir II was communicating with Ahmed Shah Durrani. This suspicion led Imadu'l-Mulk to have the emperor killed in November 1759, and then he had his body thrown from the fort's towers and into the river. Afterwards, he claimed that Alamgir II had slipped and fell accidentally. Well, Imadu'l-Mulk's rival and the former Grand Vizier, Intizamud-Dawla, he also fell victim to a similar, quote-unquote, accident. Then Imadu'l-Mulk placed Mohiyul-Milat, who was a grandson of Kambaksh, on the throne as emperor. Mohiyul-Milat took on the regal name of Shah Jahan III. The Afghans liberate Delhi. Not surprisingly, the new emperor was also Imadul Mulk's puppet. Emperor Shah Jahan III was virtually a prisoner in the Red Fort. And now, with the Afghans closing in, Imadul Mulk raided the palace looking for whatever wealth he could find. Somehow or another, he managed to squeeze 5 million rupees out of the palace, and he promptly turned it all over to the Marathas. With this money, the Maratha army advanced west to confront the Afghan army. The two armies clashed near Sirhind, and the Afghans were victorious. This led to a string of Afghan victories, and before long, the Marathas had to resort to guerrilla tactics. But even these proved to be mostly unsuccessful against the Afghans. By the time Ahmad Shah Durrani had reached the outskirts of Delhi, much of the Maratha military corps had been killed. Imadul Mulk fled Delhi and joined the Marathas at their base camp. Meanwhile, Ahmad Shah Durrani had convinced the Rohillas and the Nawab of Awadh to join his cause. In January 1760, Ahmad Shah Durrani entered a Maratha-free Delhi. He appointed a new governor of Delhi, then left a small force behind to defend the city while he marched on to the Doab region just north of Delhi. The Invasion of Bengal. Now, back in 1759, before Ahmad Shah Durrani retook Delhi again, Prince Gohar had allied with a man named Mirza Kuchak, who happened to be the governor of Allahabad, and together they invaded Bengal. They attacked Patna, which was the capital of Bihar, but were turned back. Bihar at this time was considered part of Bengal. When Imadul Mulk learned of this, he stripped the prince of his royal rank. After the failed attack on Patna, Prince Gohar wandered through the countryside for a while. And while all this was going on, Ahmad Shah Durrani and the Afghans were making their way towards Delhi. And that's when Imadul Mulk had the prince's father, Emperor Alamgir II, murdered. When Prince Gohar learned of his father's death, he declared himself emperor and took the regal name of Shah Alam II somewhere around November 1759. Well, the prince attacked Patna again in February 1760. This time, Ram Narayan, the administrator of Patna, asked the British for assistance in defending the city. Lord Robert Clive responded by sending 2 battalions and 15,000 Bengali troops, courtesy of his puppet Nawab, Mir Jafar. Prince Gohar was once again forced to withdraw. The following year, the British decided to get rid of their puppet Nawab, Mir Jafar. Not only was he unpopular, after all he had betrayed his former boss, but his soldiers had mutinied after not being paid for a long time, meaning that he was probably siphoning a lot of money off on his own. They replaced him with his nephew and son-in-law, Mir Qasim, in July 1761. The Marathas retake Delhi. In the spring of 1760, the Marathas reorganized to march on Delhi yet again. This time, however, they were also joined by the Jats. The Marathas attacked Delhi on July 22, 1760. Ahmad Shah Durrani's governor, who he had left behind, eventually sued for peace and he was allowed to leave. The Marathas once again occupied Delhi in August 1760, just 8 months after Ahmad Shah Durrani had driven them out. They looted the remaining riches of Delhi, even tearing down the silver ceiling of the Diwan-i-Khas, which was the reception chamber of the Red Fort. This alone was worth about 1 million rupees. Then they deposed Emperor Shah Jahan III and declared Shah Alam II, that is Prince Gohar, as emperor in absentia. The Marathas then advanced to Kanchpura, about 60 miles northwest of Delhi. The Marathas forced Ahmad Shah Durrani's small Afghan garrison to retreat into the city. The Marathas pursued them into the city, leading to fighting in the streets. The Afghan forces were ultimately defeated and their commander was killed. From Kunjpura, the Marathas moved on to occupy Panipat on the western shore of the Yamuna River. The Third Battle of Panipat. When he heard of the loss at Kunjpura, Ahmed Shah Durrani returned to northern India with his army. He positioned his military along certain checkpoints on the Yamuna River. This cut off the Maratha supply lines to the east and into their base in Delhi. Ahmed Shah Durrani's roughly 80,000 strong army included Afghans, Rohila Pathans, and the armies of Awadh. They set up camp at Sambalka, just south of Panipat. The Marathas' 60,000 troops were now bottled up inside Panipat. Here's a quote describing the situation for the Marathas. Contrary to their customary, highly mobile warfare strategy, the Marathas relied on a massive host, estimated at between 45,000 and 60,000, followed by an even larger group of roughly 200,000 non-combatant camp followers. This enormous crowd posed a formidable logistic challenge to the Marathas, who, under the intense pressure of hunger, found themselves caught in dire straits. Abdali imposed a siege, which lasted about 2 months, against the Marathas. By the end of November 1760, the Afghans had almost cut off food supplies to the Maratha camp based in Panipat, about 80 kilometers north of Delhi. Soldiers began to starve to death. On 13 January 1761, the Maratha chiefs pleaded with their commander, Sadashiv Rao Bhau, to be permitted to die in battle rather than fall victims to famine. Attempts to come to a negotiated settlement having been turned down by the Afghans, the Marathas saw no alternative but to attack at dawn on 14 January. Dirk Collier, The Great Mughals and Their India. Throughout the final months of 1760, Afghan and Maratha patrols clashed with each other. But Ahmed Shah Durrani was in no hurry for an all-out battle because he controlled the situation. His supply lines were secure and stretched all the way west to Afghanistan. However, the Marathas were cut off and slowly starving to death. As we can see from this quote, on January 14, 1761, the Marathas launched an attack on the Afghan forces. Now, initially, the Marathas were doing fairly well and holding their own. But then Ahmed Shah Durrani sent in fresh troops to reinforce the left flank and the center. With that, the Maratha lines crumbled and a slaughter ensued. Hundreds of Maratha leaders were killed on the battlefield and thousands more regular soldiers also met their death. With nearly 28,000 deaths, this was one of the bloodiest battles in Indian history. The Marathas that survived the battle fled, but the Afghans hunted them down. This resulted in the massacre of thousands of Marathas, many of them camp followers. This was the Third Battle of Panipat, also known as Galugara or the Great Bloodbath. From there, Ahmed Shah Durrani marched on to Punjab, where he defeated the Sikhs. And with this victory, Ahmed Shah Durrani finally left India on March 22, 1761, and returned to Kabul. Despite the devastating loss, however, the Marathas were not quite done yet. Najibud-Daulah. Before he left India, Ahmed Shah Durrani instructed that Shah Alam II, that is Prince Gohar, be recognized as the new Mughal emperor. Now Shah Alam II was still in Awadh under the control of the Nawab of Awadh, that is Shuja-ud-Daulah. The emperor's son, Jawan Bakht, ruled in his father's absence. For some reason, Ahmed Shah Durrani also allowed Imadul Mulk to remain as the Grand Vizier, and Najibud-Daulah as the paymaster, that is the Mir Bakshi. This was a similar situation to when he first occupied Delhi 4 years earlier. And just like 4 years earlier, just like before, Najibud-Daulah and Imadul Mulk did not get along. They had a history of conflict, and that could never be reconciled. Najib al-Dawla convinced the Queen Mother to appoint him as Grand Vizier, Paymaster, and Governor of Delhi. When he realized that he'd been outmaneuvered by Najib al-Dawla, Imad al-Mulk retired to an estate near Pune. He later went on to make Hajj and died in obscurity in 1800. In the next episode, the Marathas make yet another comeback. You've been listening to the Islamic History Podcast, and we hope you've enjoyed the show. You can support the Islamic History Podcast and get exclusive content by subscribing to our premium channel, Islamic History Exclusive. If you're an Apple or Spotify user, open the app and search for Islamic History Exclusive. If you're listening on Podbean, become a patron in the app and you'll get access to our premium content. You can also join by visiting patreon.com/Islamic History. I'd also like to thank Brother Zulfikar Sarosh for his research on the Mughal Empire and his continued support of the show. And thanks to all of our premium subscribers. Be sure to join the Islamic History Podcast Telegram group where you can download a copy of today's transcript. Finally, subscribe to the Islamic History Podcast YouTube channel for our video documentaries. Stay tuned for a short clip from the latest season of the Umayyad Caliphate. Until next time, my name is Muttaki Ismail for the Islamic History Podcast. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuhu. Assalamu alaikum. Welcome to the Umayyad Caliphate Season 3, presented by Islamic History Exclusive. This season, we are discussing the years 96 through 105 AH. This is episode 3-6, Origins of the Abbasids. In today's episode, we are going to continue discussing the events of 99 AH before moving on to the year 100 AH. Then we'll spend a few minutes discussing the origins of the Abbasid dynasty. So picking up in the year 99 AH, we have a man named Abdulaziz ibn al-Walid. He was the cousin of Omar ibn Abdulaziz, the new Umayyad caliph, as well as the cousin of Sulayman ibn Abdul Malik, the former, now deceased Umayyad caliph. When Abdulaziz ibn al-Walid learns of Sulayman's death, he claims the caliphate. He assumes the caliphate. Abdulaziz ibn al-Walid was not in Dabiq, that's that village in Syria where Sulayman died. Abdulaziz ibn al-Walid was not in Dabiq, so he did not know that Bay'ah, the Pledge of Allegiance, had already been given to Omar ibn Abdulaziz. So Abdulaziz ibn al-Walid, the cousin, he claimed the caliphate and had his supporters give him Bay'ah. Eventually, of course, he did learn of Omar's rise to the Khilafat, and he came to meet him. Umar asked him if he did indeed take Bay'ah from the people when he claimed the caliphate. Abdulaziz ibn al-Walid confirmed that this was true, but he also said that he did not know that Umar had already been appointed. And Umar ibn Abdulaziz, always trying to get out from under the caliphate, he replied that if Abdulaziz wanted it, he would not have opposed him. But Abdulaziz ibn al-Walid said there was no one better for the job than Omar, and he gave him Bay'ah. Another major event during this year was the Umayyad retreat from Constantinople. Omar ibn Abdulaziz ordered a withdrawal from Constantinople. As we had mentioned in earlier episodes, the Muslims, the Umayyad dynasty, was suffering terribly in this campaign. So Omar decided to cut their losses, and he sent many supplies and horses to the soldiers, but this was to help them come back home. In addition to the supplies and these horses, he also sent orders to his cousin, Maslama ibn Abdul Malik, that is Sulayman ibn Abdul Malik's brother. He sent orders for him to return home with the remaining soldiers. And as we've seen with every new caliph, Omar began appointing his own governors. He appointed new governors for Basra and Kufa. He dismissed Yazid ibn Muhallab. That may seem like a bit of a surprise, but Yazid ibn Muhallab, he was close to Omar's predecessor, Sulayman ibn Abdul Malik, but Omar ibn Abdulaziz himself, he didn't really care for Yazid ibn Muhallab. And there's a quote where he compared Yazid ibn Muhallab to a tyrant. Likewise, Yazid ibn Muhallab didn't really like Omar ibn Abdulaziz either. He criticized Omar, calling him a hypocrite. Well, now Omar ibn Abdulaziz was in charge. He dismissed Yazid ibn Muhallab and appointed a man named Al-Jarrah ibn Abdullah as the new governor of Khurasan. There's a lot more to say about both of these two men. Yazid ibn Muhallab, the former governor of Khurasan, as well as Omar's new governor of Khurasan, Al-Jarrah ibn Abdullah, we have a lot to talk about with these two guys. Let's start off with Yazid ibn Muhallab. So now we're entering the year 100 AH. Omar's new governor of Basra sent soldiers to arrest and capture Yazid ibn Muhallab. You'll understand why in a moment. Amongst these soldiers was a man named Waqi' ibn Hassan. Hopefully you remember that name. He had led the fight to depose Qutaybah ibn Muslim as governor of Khurasan. Then he assumed the governorship of Khurasan, sort of kind of assumed it. But then he himself was deposed, tortured, and imprisoned by Yazid ibn Muhallab and his sons, his son, Makhlad ibn Yazid. This was all discussed in the first two or three episodes of this season. So Yazid ibn Muhallab, he knows that they're out to get him. He tried to escape by boat, but he was eventually captured. And Waqi' ibn Hassan, the man that Yazid ibn Muhallab had tortured, personally, he must have been very happy when he did this, he personally escorted Yazid ibn Muhallab to Omar ibn Abdulaziz's soldiers, and these soldiers presented Yazid ibn Muhallab to Omar himself.